Living Reconciled, a podcast dedicated to giving our communities practical evidence of the gospel message by helping Christians learn how to live in the reconciliation that Jesus has already secured for us by living with grace across racial lines.
Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Living Reconciled, episode 11. I am your host, Brian Crawford. And this week is a little different. I am not with my co-host, Nettie Winters and Austin Hoyle, because I am at a great convention with good friends. And one of those good friends is a gentleman by the name of Dehadi Lewis. Dehadi Lewis is the CEO of My Boulevard, and he is also lead pastor at Blueprint Church. And he is a good friend that I've learned and gleaned a lot from through the years. He has a tremendous amount to discuss regarding the issues of reconciliation. And I couldn't be more delighted and privileged to have this opportunity to sit with him. Before I dive into a conversation with Dehadi, I do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. We want to thank Miss Ann Winters, Mr. Robert Ward, Pastor Jonathan Moore at Christian Life Church, and Miss Doris Powell, and also our Grace Leadership Partners, St. Dominic Hospital, and Unity Partners, Atmos Energy, Regions Foundation, and Brown Missionary Baptist Church. As always, thank you for your support of the work of Mission Mississippi and this podcast, Living Reconciled. It is because of you that we're able to do what it is that we do. And with that said, I do want to turn our attention to our guest, Mr. Dehadi Lewis. Brother, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. What's up, man? Excited to be on.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you, man. If you don't mind, tell us a little bit, man, about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your family. Why don't you start us off by talking a little bit about your story of salvation?
Yeah. So my name, again, is Dehadi Lewis. I wasn't raised in the church at all. My dad played pro football. So pretty much growing up as a middle child, football was my God. You ask why I say middle child, because middle child, so like I was the middle, so my oldest brother got attention because he was the oldest. I have a younger brother, he got the attention because he had asthma. So he was the middle child because I was in four, but he was the middle child, but he had asthma, so that's how he got his attention. And then my youngest sister was the youngest, and she was the only girl, so she just got all the attention. And then there was me, so I was just like, where do I fit? So early on, I had questions like, where do I fit? What am I? And really, so football was the thing for me. And right. So my dad played pro football. I wanted to be like my dad. So football became my God. Mm. And that's really what it was. Everything I did and didn't do was because just try to be like my dad and play pro football. Mm. And so that's what happened is like when football was going well, I was good. And when football was going bad, I was not. And so really what God used to bring me to himself was my senior year in high school. I was wanting to go D1 and all of those things. And just didn't get any offers to a major Division I school. And it was a couple of small schools that offered, but at that time, you weren't going pro if you went to a small school.
Right.
And so I was just like, I'd rather go to a JC than go to a small school. Ended up not going, went to a JC. And that's really what God like started saying, like they're like bringing the question, like there has to be more than life than sports.
Right,
and
right.
So in that, I started studying different religions, world religions. Like I studied Hinduism, Buddhism, African tribal religions, Islam, Muslim. I was like, I studied all these different religions because I was just like, there has to be more than life than sports.
Right, right.
But then it was at that time that that it really did say, like, Christianity is the only religion that said, you're not good enough. You need a savior.
Absolutely.
And that's really what the Lord used to draw me in. Because I was, quote unquote, a good kid because I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't do all those things.
Absolutely.
Because that's what ended my dad's career early. So I was, quote unquote, a good kid according to the world standards, but I didn't get but I knew I was like something where there was a void.
Yeah.
And I was in search of something bigger than myself. And so became a believer in college.
Okay.
As a sophomore in college, and ended up getting a scholarship to the University of North Texas. And pretty much my born again life, I was raised in Cali, but my born again life began in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Tell us a little bit about from born again life to meeting wife, bride, family. I know, of course, you have a beautiful bride, a little tribe. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Little tribe is small. I mean, it's the smallest thing. I feel like it's a village. It's a village. Now, I'm married to my wonderful wife, Angie, going 22 years. And now I have, we have six children, and so those children, like, we range, and they're all teenagers. And so we got a 20-year-old, a 19-year-old, 17, 16, 15, 14. So we're covering all the grades. I'm graduating the kid every single day, you know, year for about 7 years straight.
Absolutely.
And this is crazy.
You got a starting five and a six man.
Yeah. So it's crazy, but I got married to my wife, and I love my wife. She's a part of a lot of my story of just my search for identity. You know, as a believer, I just really didn't, like, I had a desire to serve the Lord. I was the guy on campus, you know, trying to talk about racial reconciliation. I would do all of those things. But I just never thought, like, I was just like, but I'm a married black woman.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't have a problem with anybody else, but it's for me. That's just my goal. And then God used that to say, okay, let's see how far you want to go with this. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, you know, dating a white girl, which became my wife, Angie, and she became my wife. And that's really when I had to find out, like, where is my true identity in Christ? And so it was just really, like a journey that God used in my life to kind of shape me and, you know, in that way, but love it. Like, right now I'm the dumbest one in my home because I got six teenagers. And if you are a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about right now.
Absolutely.
But it's great. I love the house we live in, Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, we're in the birthplace of Martin Luther King Jr., 04th Ward. Love the neighborhood. It's the largest Section 8 housing in the Southeast, but it's also the fastest growing gentrifying community. And so there's just a lot going on, but it's just like, I love where God has me, and it's been a blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about when reconciliation, racial healing, navigating our racial divide as a country, when did it really become significant and kind of essential for you? It was like, I can't navigate out of this. I can't excuse my way out of this. This is a pursuit that God wants me to pursue.
I wouldn't say it became essential for me until kind of like Trayvon Martin, like during that, and the response of believers. It's always been a part of it. Like, in college, I would talk about it just because, man, it makes sense. Like, we need to be getting together. Like, well, I don't understand. Why would we not be together? Mm-hmm. But it didn't become essential. Like, this is what's needed. Cause now I would say that the Ministry of Reconciliation, specifically racial reconciliation, has become such a paramount thing in America because of what we've seen. This, I wouldn't even say they're not even cracks. They're like the wide, like, distance,
yeah,
and even growing distance that we see between races. And so I talk about, I'm a huge discipleship guy, and I say, we're not able to make disciples in North America unless we address the issue of race. And I think it's a missiological thing. It's a gospel issue.
Absolutely.
It is a issue that we have to, embrace.
Absolutely.
Holistically, because the sin of America is this issue of racism.
Absolutely.
Right? We divided over race. Like, race is the major reason why denominations divided. Like, the issue of slavery, the issue of race, the issue of what do we do. Like, and there's at the core is the Imago Dei. And I think we have to kind of run to that tension. And so, yeah, so it has been, I would say it was in that period, in the response of just like that took place there.
Are you talking about the response in general, the response of the church, response of black church, white church?
The response of the church in general.
Okay.
In different ways, right? And I wrote a book about this, but it just talks about the idea that we were either overly aggressive or overly passive, right? When it came down to like our response, and it has caused a greater division in such a time where the church, I really believe, at such a time as this, and I really believe that the church has lost its voice, you know, and it's not speaking prophetically to the culture, and And if we don't speak prophetically, they will find replacements.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we're seeing what's happening.
Talk to me a little bit about that book. Advocates is the name of the book for our listeners, The Narrow Path to Racial Reconciliation. Dahati, you wrote this book back in 2019, and it seems like it was a response, so to speak, in terms of all of the racial unrest that we were experiencing as a country. Tell me a little bit about what drove you and motivated you to write that book. And then also, probably on the other side of the break, we'll dig into some of the contents and some of the elements of the book.
Yeah, so it came out of the election in 2016, when President Trump was elected as president. And I remember staying up that night, like on the election. It was about, it gotta be like 2 o'clock when I stayed up because I was in disbelief because I think everybody thought Hillary's gonna win, they announced President Trump. It was, you know, and I started flipping through the stations, and I like, you know, look, being getting the commentary, and I just remember whether it was on Fox, CNN, Fox, you know, just all the different stations.
C-SPAN,
One thing, these are stations that never agree on anything,
right?
But they agreed on this one thing. They said our country is divided.
Right.
Our country is divided, and it was for the first time. A lot of times you as a minority, you would experience, man, yeah. You know, and it was Tuesday, but it was in a way that they were communicating like we knew.
Right.
And that's the first time it was just like so clear that our country was divided. And I was just like, man, I pastor a church that was minority, majority, multi-ethnic. And I was just like, man, I know that our church, as I saw this, I was like, I have people at our church that voted for President Trump. Mm-hmm. And I have people who think you're the devil because you voted for President Trump. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are we going to do? And so that next week at church, we said we're gonna gather together and we're gonna talk about this. And so we said for the next 6 weeks, we're gonna walk through what's happening, you know, in the state of our country. And so we did that, you know, and so for 6 weeks. And then so the book came out of that, you know, because that 6 weeks turned to another time and another, you know, it just kind of began to perpetuate. We wrote the book actually in 2017.
Okay.
You know, so 2017, and you know how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a year to publish and all that, but so it came out later. But man, that was just really a heart for trying to minister to our church. Mm. And that's really where the book came from, and just trying to bring dignity, you know, to to people who have differing opinions and then really just champion what does the gospel look like? What is a gospel response to this type of place or season that we were in as a church? And so that's where Advocates came. Mm. And it's based off of the book of Philemon, where we talk about this concept of becoming an advocate, you know, and it's instead of an aggravator or an agitator. And so, yeah, so that's kind of the premise of why the book and why the passion.
Good deal. Man, I want to take a quick break, but then when we do, we're going to come back, and I would love to dig a little deeper into this idea of advocate versus aggregator. I'm with Dahati Lewis. My name is Brian Crawford, and this is Living Reconciled. Living Reconciled is a work of Mission Mississippi, but it is not our only work. From days of dialogue and prayer meetings to consultation for schools, businesses, and churches, Mission Mississippi is eager to help you, your team, your church, and your community live reconciled. Every month, join us for our weekly prayer breakfasts on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6:45 a.m., our bi-weekly statewide connection meetings on Fridays at 10 a.m., and a focused time of prayer on the third Thursday of the month at 7 a.m. To get details on any of our upcoming events or to learn how you can invite us to your church, business, or school, visit our website at missionmississippi.org and click on the events button or call us at 601-353-6477. Hey, thanks again for joining us on Living Reconciled. This is episode 11. I am your host, Brian Crawford. My good friends, Nettie Winters and Austin Hoyle are not with me. I'm at a conference this week, but I am with another good friend by the name of Dahati Lewis, pastor of Blueprint Church, CEO of My Boulevard, and also the author of a great book that I would encourage you to read called Advocates, The Narrow Path to Racial Reconciliation. We were talking on the other side of the break, D, about this book called Advocates, And you talked about this idea that there was two types of people, one being an aggregator or aggravator, rather, and then the other being an advocate. Could you dive a little deeper into that?
I'm going to do a little aggregating before we start, because I noticed on the beginning in the introduction, like the people you do the podcast with were great, good friends. It was three goods. And for me, I only got one good. So I felt a little way about that. So I just felt like I needed to bring that.
Good friend. Okay. The Hottie Lewis.
Now I'm ready.
The Hottie Lewis.
I need to be focused. So it's about like confession.
Didn't mean to sell you short.
No, man. Okay. But so I've written a couple of books. I wrote a book called Among Wolves, talked about disciple making in the city, and I wrote this book, and I did some other things. But anytime I write, or anytime, you know, whether it's preaching, teaching, like anytime I'm a firm believer of the scriptures and like pulling from the scriptures.
Yeah.
And so I basically went to the book of Philemon. Philemon is not about racial reconciliation, but it's a principle of reconciliation that you talk about a runaway slave and, you know, his former slave master coming to the tension. And, you know, and oftentimes, especially in our day, when we think about tensions or conflict, we always think about either the oppressed or the oppressor, right? And, but I love the book of Philemon, because the book of Philemon comes at it from a different perspective, and that's another person.
Absolutely.
And that's the person, that's the argument of the reconciler.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you see Paul in here seeing two people that he loves, both the slave owner and the slave, runaway slave. And he says, like, he could have easily says, like, I could have ran to this, but like we got to run to this, run to the tension. And so in there, in the book, I open up just talking about this idea of like, Paul is an advocate. Right. And so we talk about like a reconciler. And so, and I was like, what the problem is that oftentimes when we come to things like the situations, we're trying to always find fault. Right. Or we we're either overly aggressive or overly sensitive. And so it ends up creating a worse scenario than even before. And so I use the example of a ping pong game. Like if we are volleying back and forth and ping pong, if I hit the ball to you and you're supposed to hit the ball back to me and we just hit the ball back, we say we're volleying, just warming up. Like the goal of that is not necessarily to win. But let's just say if I hit the ball over to you and I ping it over to you and then you go and you run up to the top of the tip, you spike it as hard as you can. And I'm like, whoa. I'm just like, we're just volleying. Like, we're supposed to keep the ball on the table. And so I do it again, and you go back and you slam it really hard again. I was like, that would aggravate me. That would not, like, we're not here to do that. We're trying to have an exchange back and forth.
Absolutely.
But because you're coming overly aggressive, it's like, whoa, that's a lot.
Absolutely.
For what's going on.
Absolutely.
So that would stir up some emotions. The other thing, though, is that, you know, that makes real sense. But the other thing is, if we say, oh, you want to volley, and we ping back and forth, but then I ping it over to you, and we're volleying, and you just let the ball hit, and it just, boom, bing, and it goes off into the side. Mm-hmm. You're just like, you said you want to volley, right? Let's do it. And I hit it back over, and you just, he's like, I'm not playing. I just refuse to play. That would also aggravate me.
Absolutely.
Right? And so what we've seen when it comes to issues of race is that either we find that we are either overly aggressive and we're just slamming it, or is overly passive and was just like, we refuse. And what I found was, is that that's a natural reaction, that we are part of this, a fear response, is an anxious response. And, you know, whenever we get our anxiety, we go into fight, flight, or freeze. And so we see the fight, overly aggressive, the flight, like we leave, we're just not going to play because we don't want to be called a racist. And then, or the other one is frozen. And so what I wrote the book, Advocates for the Frozen. Like, these are the people that I think that are like, hey, I want to get in the game. I want to do something productive, but I just don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how would we look at the scriptures and look at a reconciler or an advocate to come in and basically teach us some of the basic steps on how to get in and how to engage as a reconciler or as an advocate, you know, whenever we see conflict, specifically applied to the issue of race?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you say that, man. We talk a lot about that frozen in Mission, Mississippi. We, you know, and when we're speaking to churches and speaking to other groups, community groups, you know, I often say that, there's the group that we have to confront that's unconvinced that reconciliation is even the thing to pursue. And then there's the group that are saying, hey, reconciliation is a thing to pursue. I just don't know how to even get started on this vertical, on this horizontal reconciliation thing, brother to brother, sister to sister. And then there's the group that's like, yeah, reconciliation is a thing to pursue, but man, you just don't understand. I have been beaten and battered and bruised in this, and so I'm just tired. And oftentimes we say, hey, here's what we're here to do. We're here to deal with the folks that are convinced, but that are struggling because they don't know how, but we want to offer you some tools to help you navigate. Or maybe you're in it and maybe you've been in it for a while, but you're just weary because you've been beaten up so bad. And so we want to comfort you. Yeah. But just that group alone, which really comprises the Frozen at times, just that group alone is such a huge endeavor that, you know, Mission Mississippi doesn't have the capacity or the energy right now to spend a whole lot of time trying to convince people that say reconciliation isn't even a thing to pursue. Right. Man, I could just spend all of my days just concentrating on that Frozen. And so it's really compelling that you kind of offer that in the book.
And I think one of the things that we have to recognize about that is in all of those, that is a response to trauma triggering events. Whenever we're dealing with the issue of reconciliation, especially around race, it triggers trauma. So oftentimes we're not even talking about the thing that's right in front of us.
Absolutely.
We're talking about our history, our heritage. We're talking about so many things, you know, and I think, and that's really why, and you know, we talk a lot about emotions is because if we don't deal with the trauma, we're not really even having to talk. You know, we're both married and we've had those conversations or arguments. I like to say conversations.
Those conversations
with our spouse.
Healthy conversations.
Healthy conflict.
Yeah, I know our wives are listening. Yeah, healthy conversations. Healthy.
Whenever we have those, sometimes we're just like, we're not even talking about the matter that at hand. We're talking about the trauma of last time, you know, that we had an argument or the last time. You know, and I think that was happening. And so when we talk at our church, when those 6 weeks when we was like, we're going to talk about this, what I realized is that it was really hard for our church. But then I also realized that in the midst of having this hard conversation, people were in their trauma. You know that someone is in their trauma when something that ought to be like a 3 is treated like it was at a 7.
Absolutely.
Or 8 is like, okay, This is more than what's right in front of us. And so
we gotta
look at this. We gotta address this. And that's why if we don't have the tools, as you said, I think is really important. You won't be able to address. So we talk in the book about, man, how do we give those people tools to address?
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's funny. You know, my wife was our episode 9, guest. And of course she came on and talked about the emotional, navigation of reconciliation. And the one thing she kept hammering on as a mental health therapist and professional was this idea of you have to remember there's a story. There's a story. And so if you are trying to enter into the conversation around reconciliation and racial healing without understanding there's a story, that you yourself bring a story to the conversation, then what you will do is that you will bring your story to bear on the person that you're dealing with. And they weren't a part of that story. Yeah. And so you're talking about all your hurt and all your wounds. They're like, wait a second, what did I do?
Right.
And if you're not being honest about where it's coming from, then it's going to create, that's going to create tension, unnecessary tension and an unhealthy divide. Matter of fact, I stumbled on this quote from Augustine, one of the early church fathers, where he talks about this kind of ideal of restoring in Galatians. And he says, when you talk about restoring one another, we should never undertake the task of chiding another's sin unless cross-examining our own conscience, we can assure ourselves before God that we are acting from love. And then he says this, if reproaches or threats or injuries voiced by the one you are calling to account have wounded your spirit, then for that person to be healed by you, you must not speak until you are healed yourself, unless you act from worldly motives to hurt and make your tongue a sinful weapon against evil. And so, to summarize it, basically he's saying that you can't even start with healing if you aren't willing, healing the other person, if you aren't willing to confront the wound that's in you, otherwise you're going to try to heal or quote unquote fix from a place of hurt. And that's just going to increase the hurt and increase the pain. Would you say a lot of the discussions we're having around race is a result of that?
Yeah. And I think in what I like to do is to take it from a slightly different perspective in that, because even that when you're talking about it, it's like coming from trying to deal with the two people at in conflict with one another versus coming at it from the vantage point oftentimes as the person that's outside, right? And so I'm looking at two people who are conflicting, and how do I come as reconciled? Because a lot of times this happens with, you know, on your job. Right. Hey, so-and-so did this to me, and so-and-so did, and it's not even about you and your friend. And so the question is, at that point, what you do with that information that has been given, are you either going to be an aggravator, are you going to be an advocate?
Absolutely. Right?
And so I think that that's super important to understand that, because so many of our conflicts comes with that first person who they went to that safe space, or what they thought was a safe space, to be able to kind of say, and how you respond, whether as an aggravator or as an advocate, either you're like, I'm not touching that, this, you know, that's on you, or you're like, man, let's go get him, and you get to go to blows with someone, or you just frozen. It's just like, what do you do in that moment, right? What do you do in that moment? Because what you say is either going to get fuel, you're going to defuse, you know, that situation. And I think Philemon gives us the ability to do that. But I think it is important from an interpersonal vantage point, exactly what you're saying, just basically get the log out your own eye.
Absolutely.
Right? It's just like before you talk about the speck in another person's eye. And I think that that is important. And so you've heard it said, and I just firmly agree, it's like seek to understand before trying to be understood. And I think that that is critical to understanding those places. But again, as an advocate, or a reconciler, you have to go create safe spaces to have these types of conversations.
What does safe space look like for you?
Well, I mean, I think number one is a commitment to not leave. Right? A commitment to not
stay at the table.
Stay at the table. Because there's going to be some hard things that I said. And I tell people that's super important that you got to stay. But and here's the second reason. And this is why you would not stay. Is when harm is being taken place. And that's kind of number two. We got to speak the truth in love. Speak the truth in love.
Because if
I speak the truth in love to you, right, then I can't guarantee you that you're not going to be hurt. I may hurt you in speaking the truth in love, but my intentions are not to hurt you. However, no one needs to stay in a harmful environment. Right.
Yeah.
A harmful environment is when either I don't care if I hurt you, or if I'm intentionally trying to hurt you. That's harmful. We don't need to be in those situations. But if we're going to get down and really address this, we got to be able to speak the truth in love. Right. And so where you may get hurt, but you're not going to be harmed. We're not going to allow people to harm. And so we got to commit to staying, and we got to commit to speaking the truth in love, which may create hurt, because hurt is just simply saying that I've been wounded, that I have pain, but harm is an intentional thing. So we have to create that. But then the other thing is that we have to be able to give people the tools to be able to tell the truth about what's going on inside. And if we don't give the people the tools to tell the truth about what's going on inside, then all we're going to do is perform for one another. Right. And we're going to create this codependence that we oftentimes have. And I think that that's super important for us to recognize that. And so I try to keep, there's many other things that we could say. And a lot of times we can like the rules, but it's like, no, we're going to stay in here. You can't leave.
Right.
We're going to fight to speak the truth in love, where we're going to, you may get hurt, but we're not going to allow harm. And then the final one, about willingness to tell the truth.
Absolutely. Right?
Because a lot of times when I'm speaking to you, I'm speaking out of my own pain. I'm hurt. I'm lonely. I'm sad. I'm angry. Right. And, or I have fear. Right. And so that's oftentimes. And so those are like three kind of rules that we have. But in the book, I'd say, you know, like I like to frame it in the book, you know, about what is an advocate leader. An advocate leader is one who relies on the power of Christ. You know, it's just kind of like, understand that we are limited to our words, but it's the power of God that changes the hearts. And so all we can do is speak, you know, speak the truth in love. The second one is that we got to run to the tension, right? We got to run to the tension, but we have to run with the heart of reconciliation. And I think that that is so critical, that when we run to the tension, but we have to run with the heart of reconciliation. And oftentimes, and I say in the book, I said, because, reconciliation, like you can have justice without reconciliation. And justice without reconciliation is what the Bible calls hell. The Bible says every knee will bow, every tongue will confess, but those who are not reconciled to Christ will spend eternity in hell. The goal of the Christian is not just simply justice.
Yeah.
The goal of the Christian is reconciliation, because you can't have true reconciliation without justice.
Yeah.
So you have to run to the tension. You got to deal with what's in front of us, but we got to run with the heart of reconciliation. So that's the second one. And the third one that I talk about in the book is simply that we have to respond with dignity. I love what you talked about, like the story and what your wife was talking about, but I think that in that we say the same thing, we teach the same thing. We say it this way. We say people are people. Everybody has a story, right? If everybody has a story and people are people, that changes everything, because I have to treat you less than a person in order to intentionally try to aggravate you.
Absolutely.
I can't come to you and see you as a person. So I have to see you as less. That's the reason why for so many years they had to say that we were 3/5 of a man. Because if they saw us as a person, it's something in our human heart that can't just do that. And that's what the Bible says. If any of you think raka, think nothing of someone, right? Like that's what it talked about. No, we got to understand that they are a full human, the imago Dei. So people are people. And then for us to humanize one another, we have to understand everybody has a story. And so what we did was we shared the story. Hey, why don't some people share the story of why, if you voted for President Trump, why you voted for President Trump? Or if you voted for Hillary, why? And we would give other stories of why people voted, because what we wanted to do is to give a dignified response. So we said, speak with dignity.
Right.
Right? You got to listen with empathy, but speak with dignity, recognizing that people are people. Everybody has a story. People are not just oftentimes, people are not just voting in spite of
something
that, like, they came to a place because of their story.
Right.
And I think we don't take the time to sit and to listen and to hear one another's story. It doesn't mean we have to agree with their conclusion.
Absolutely.
But people got there because of a reason, and that's what we have to do.
Empathy is established when we hear the story.
Yes.
Even if agreement isn't established, empathy is. I want to take for our radio listeners, man, I hope you guys will jump over to the podcast, because we got a couple of more questions to wrap this conversation up. And so our podcast listeners get a little bonus content. I want to talk to the Hottie about My Boulevard, and I want to talk to the Hottie about Blueprint. Those are two big pieces of the Hottie's life, and I want to dive into that for a few minutes before we wrap up. And so if you are a radio listener, we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast. You can go to any podcast app out there and just type in Living Reconciled and just subscribe to that. For our podcast listeners, jump on over to the podcast side as we take this quick break, and we will be back with bonus content with the Hottie Lewis.
Living Reconciled is a work of Mission Mississippi, but it is not our only work. From days of dialogue and prayer meetings to consultation for schools, businesses, and churches, Mission Mississippi is eager to help you, your team, your church, and your community live reconciled. Every month, join us for our weekly prayer breakfasts on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6:45 a.m., our bi-weekly statewide connection meetings on Fridays at 10 a.m., and a focused time of prayer on the third Thursday of the month at 7 a.m. To get details on any of our upcoming events or to learn how you can invite us to your church, business, or school, visit our website at missionmississippi.org and click on the events button, or call us at 601-353-6477.
Hey, thanks again so much for joining us on episode 11 of Living Reconciled. I am your host, Brian Crawford, with my good, good, good friend, the Hottie Lewis.
I feel better. I feel a lot better.
That's good. That's good. The Hottie has been unpacking a lot of great things with us today pertaining to his book, Advocates, the narrow path to racial reconciliation, talking about his life story, talking about his family, talking about his journey in the work of reconciliation. I want to navigate to something that is near and dear to the Hottie. I'm familiar with it. I play a part in it. I serve a role in it, and that is My Boulevard. The Hottie, would you take a moment and talk to us about My Boulevard, and in particular, how do you think My Boulevard plays a role in the work of racial healing and reconciliation?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the very core of what we do at My Boulevard is about helping Christian leaders to make disciples where they live, where they work, and where they worship, right? We want to help people be all that God has created them to be so that they can do all that God has created them to do. I think that, you know, when, you know, people are, have those critical moments, and we've all been there. Like, we've had those critical moments where we just like, man, we knew that God was at work. It was just like, man, I just need to grow. I just need to get that in. But we've also had that moment where we looked around, was like, who's going to do it? Mm. Who's going to pour into us? Who's going to give me that? Like, you know that it's a critical moment. And so at Boulevard, we just like, man, we want to capture those moments. We want, like, especially for people who are ministering in majority, minority, multi-ethnic spaces, we want to capture that moment. And I think there are certain seasons, right? Like 9/11 and certain things, like those are critical seasons. Like, mm. when there's a new shooting and all yeah. that, you know, it's just like, we immediately go like, why are there shootings? Like, we Google stuff. We're like, the pandemic, man, we're like, why am I so anxious? Why am I so isolated and lonely? Like, there's those things, and they start Googling things. And then we just kind of like, oh, like, we don't know what to do. And there's a critical moment. And so we were just like, my Boulevard is like, how do we help Christian leaders to make disciples where they live, everyday life, where they work, right? And where they worship, the church. And so it's just kind of like, that's really what we're trying to do. And so we're trying to create holistic disciple-making plan, where we're just trying to disciple the whole person. And so I think it's really important as it relates to what we're talking about, because this issue of race has been not a issue, but I think the issue in America, and it is the crimson stain. Mm. It's the stain that we've had on our history. Absolutely. From the beginning. This is how the history the America was birthed, how it gained its wealth, all of those things. And that's the reason why I say, if we're going to make disciples, we have to address the issue of race. Mm-hmm. And it's not just America. I think the Bible addresses the issue of race
over and over
ethnicity,
again. Over and over again.
The book of Acts.
Absolutely.
Like, you just think about the concept of, how do we go from an homogeneous church who asked, their very first question in the book of Acts was, are you going to put us on top again? Are you going to put the Jews back on top?
Absolutely.
And she was like, no, that's not the type of power I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about a different type of power.
Absolutely.
Right? To all the way to now, we're going to the ends of the earth.
Absolutely.
Right? And so we see this taking place, and we see the progression of that, mm-hmm. that goes from, all right, I heard what God says, but I'm going to build my own Tower of mm-hmm. Babel, mm-hmm. right? The modern day Tower of Babel, where by the time you get to Acts chapter 6, they're like, man, this is great. Over 40,000-50,000 Christians,
Absolutely.
But all Jewish.
Absolutely.
And God was just like, okay, let me start stirring up the nest.
Absolutely.
A little bit. Hebraic and, you know, Hellenistic.
Absolutely.
Issues. Then you got, all right, let me start ostracizing you.
Absolutely.
Chapter 7. Now, next thing you know, we're in Judea and Samaria now.
Absolutely.
Right? And then in Judea and Samaria, all right, let me appoint somebody to even take it even further. They hit Paul, mm-hmm. knocks him up, blinds the man, mm-hmm. knocks, like, he had that supernatural conversion. Mm-hmm. Then you got this, now let me work on Peter, because mm-hmm. I know everybody's going to try to get Peter's. So you see what I'm saying? Over and over again, these ethnic. And we didn't, I guess what I'm saying is, we didn't get to the church at Antioch by chance.
Right.
God had to put Peter in a trance.
Absolutely.
He had, like, the gospel going
Absolutely.
To other races outside of your own, like, there's always been a hindrance.
Yep.
And so the Bible,
Paul yeah. persecutes, and then
yeah.
and Paul persecutes, then Paul himself's knocked off his animal. Then what happens? We send Paul to Antioch,
yes.
you know, to do the work of the church and to minister to a cross-racial, cross-ethnic
yep.
church. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
You see it. So I mean, I'm saying, like, I think the book of Galatians, you see all of that. There's a reason why there's a guy named Laman Tamar, and this is that, and he wrote, he says, Christianity is the only religion where 80% of its participants is not in the origin of its birth.
Mm.
Every other religion, whether it's Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, its predominant participants, over 80 to even more of its participants is in the origin. Christianity is a missionary.
Yeah.
It's a missionary. There's no, there, like, and so in that,
yep.
it is spread.
Yep.
all throughout all the different nations.
Yep.
And so there's beauty to that, but there's also challenges.
Absolutely.
Right? Because now we have to wrestle with, what does genuine Christianity
yeah.
lived out, expressed, where you don't have to convert into another culture.
Right.
And, you know, that you do.
Jerusalem Council in Acts 15 is like, hey, you got a group trying to convert us into another yep. culture, and they streamline it. Say, no, that's not the gospel. gospel's for the nations. It's for everybody. So they streamline it. So that you don't have to convert it to another culture in order to be.
I really believe the question that they're asking and answering is how Jewish do you have to be in order to be a Christian?
Absolutely.
And that's what they're wrestling with.
Absolutely.
And I think the question that America's wrestling with is how white do we have to be in order to be Christian?
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about, the difference between white evangelicalism, black Christian, you know, and all of the varieties in between. And I think those are critical for us to understand those things. And so, yeah, so that's so my boulevard is about like addressing those issues, specifically coming at it from a majority, minority, multi-ethnic. Mm-hmm. We like to focus in on majority, minority spaces, right? But multi-ethnic, urban, right? And when we talk about that majority, it's density, diversity, where the majority is the minority. And when we talk about that, it's one of two things. It could either be like a place like Atlanta where you say 55% are African-American. The minority is the majority. The other way that you can do is like a place like San Jose where 20% is the largest population, Hispanic. But it's 20% and the next is 18%, the next 15, right? And so when people say that America will become a majority minority country, basically they're saying is that it's when white people dip under 50% and there's no longer a majority. And that's where they're talking about, right? And when that happens, there's no true majority. We got to understand, how do we now engage? How do we make disciples when our neighbors no longer look like us, talk like us, act like us? And so when I talk about my boulevard, we say we got to shift from simply an ethnic missiology to a neighbor missiology. And we got to ask the question that Jesus was asking, right? Or that there was asked of Jesus, who is my neighbor?
Who's my neighbor?
Right? Who is my neighbor? And I think Jesus answered basically, and this is my version, is my neighbor is anybody who crosses your path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Let me capture or grab just a little bit more of your time and ask you this question, because it's really, for me, it resonates with the discussion that we're having here. And that is this. So what is, as we kind of try to wrap this conversation up, which has been super fruitful and super helpful, I'm grateful for you to give us some time with you today, Dahati. What is one area that you see America is moving in the right direction? Or let's get a little narrow, more narrow. What is one area that the American church is moving in the right direction as it relates to the work of reconciliation? What is one area that gives you hope as you think about just the landscape right now?
Well, I think there's more people talking about it, right? I think there's more people talking about, more people recognizing what's going on. And I really believe, more than anything, I'm excited because I really believe God is answering the prayer of Matthew 9:37-38, when Jesus says the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And then he says, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out more laborers. That word send out there is a word that is called ekbalo. And he says, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would force out more laborers into the harvest. I really believe urbanization right now, where you talk about gentrification, redistribution of the poor, God is ekbaloing us. He is causing people that were, you know, like this old idea is like, go around people who look like you, talk like you, and act like you. It's harder and harder to achieve.
Absolutely.
Because poor neighborhoods are being gentrified. Suburbans are being, you know, having more ethnic minorities.
Absolutely.
And so all these worlds are coming together and it's forcing us to have to deal with it.
Absolutely.
Right? We're like, we got to deal with it. We can't keep running. We can't keep only being around people who look like us and talk like us and act like us. We got to deal with our neighbors.
Absolutely.
And I think this is a beautiful thing. And because of that, I think people are actually doing that. And so cities are already majority minority, multi-ethnic. And so, and you're seeing people flocking to cities, right? And so I think people want to see something different, but they just don't know what. And I think this is where the church has the ability to cast a compelling vision to what true unity could look like. And I think because of our fear and us going into fight, flight, or freeze and not having the tools, we stand on the sidelines. And so we allow other voices to stand up and to be that voice But there, that voice oftentimes is not reconciliation.
Right.
It's something different. And I think what God has given us, the tools and the means and the scriptures who have addressed this, dealt with this, you know, over and over again. And so we can do that. And so I'm excited about the potential. I'm excited that God is forcing us out. I pray that we would respond. You know, we would respond to the call.
Yeah. Give me one way to put a bow on this. Give me one way that people can respond.
I just think by simply having conversations, creating safe space. If we cannot have real conversations in the church, then we can't address this. We cannot give what we do not have. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a critical piece. And so I hope people, we would have the courage to do things like what we talked about earlier. It's like host safe spaces.
Absolutely.
To talk.
Absolutely.
To have conversations, to have real conversations. And we've done it. I've tried everything, all the way from, hey, like, let's all talk in the room. Hey, if you voted for this person, get over here. If you voted for that person, get over here. If you believe this is the solution, get over here. You know, just like, and allow people, tell us why you think that's is the best solution. And giving people dignity. Until we can see people as people, and that the fact that everybody has a story, create safe spaces for people to do that and to talk about that, where we're acting as advocate leaders and not aggravators, just trying to get our stories out where we're creating places of harm, but we're speaking the truth in love, you know, I think we will continually be behind because we are scared to not be called something. And I think we gotta run to this tension, but we have to run with the heart of reconciliation.
Amen. I appreciate you mentioning the idea of having a conversation. Mission Mississippi, for those of you all who don't know, Living Reconciled is an extension of the work of Mission Mississippi. It's not the only thing we do. However, we do host and days of dialogue across our state and region, and we would love to help you and aid you in whatever way necessary. As we mentioned, there are a lot of people out there that are wounded and just kind of battered from this discussion, that are just throwing their hands up and saying, I'm tired. And then there are others that are saying, hey, I'm in, but I just don't know how to do it. We would love to come alongside you and help you in that regard. So please, by all means, visit missionmississippi.org. Go out, reach out to the contact page and let us know how we can support and serve you. Dahati, how can we keep up with you, man?
Well, you can look at myblvd.co. That's the site that is about helping Christian leaders make disciples where they live, work, and worship. We have a thing called the City Syllabus that is really disciple-making resources to help you be what you want to see reproduced. And then I would also say, my Boulevard, like, go to any of our social handles. You know, you can just, with a name like Dahati, you can just go type in DHAATI on any of your Twitter, Facebook, any of the handles. I do a daily thing, Monday through Friday, podcasts, all of those things that we have. So that's other things, the podcast, the Integrate Podcast, my BLVD Integrate Podcast. So any of those handles, any of those things are ways to journey with us in this story of what we're trying to do.
Fantastic, fantastic. Brother, you are a good friend, a dear friend, and you are a great podcast interview, and I appreciate your time on today. Thanks for joining us on Living Reconciled, and those that joined us via podcast, we appreciate you guys and your continued support of this podcast. Please like, subscribe, all those good things on the on the podcast tools that you use. That helps us and gets the word out about this podcast, and we would love for you to share it with your neighbors and friends as well. My name is Brian Crawford. I am with Dahati Lewis, and until next time, God bless.
Thanks for joining Living Reconciled. If you would like more information on how you can be a part of the ongoing work of helping Christians learn how to live in the reconciliation that Jesus has already secured, please visit us online at missionmississippi.org or call us at 601-353-6477. Thanks again for listening.